So I wanted to share tonight about generosity, as you were saying, and the magicness, the wonderfulness of cultivating generosity on the path. Mr. Elon, if you could even move left or right so I could see you, that would be great. Thank you, thank you. You're the man. So, yeah, it's kind of a, generosity is an amazing practice. It really is, can be much more illuminating on the path than some of us might think. It's you know, it's wonderful about the Dharma. Like, I used to laugh, but Rodney was a great teacher for Sims, who's actually doing his last, by the way, online retreat. When is that? In February? A couple of weeks. If you're interested, he's quite astonishing. He's doing his last online retreat. He's gotten older. So if you are so interested, go on the Sims website and signed up, it would be well worth it. But he always was, whatever he was talking about, he'd say, well, this is actually the core of the Dharma. And, you know, he talked about lots of different things, and they all were the core of the Dharma, and they all kind of interlaced. And generosity is like that, because, you know, what's wonderful about it is, what could be simpler than generosity for us humans? You know, open a door for someone, give a kind word to someone, offer your dog a treat or your friend a treat. You know, it's just these little things that we can do from the heart. It's so wonderful. It's so accessible. And yet, generosity is incredibly profound. And just by its nature, it leads to deconcretizing of self, that elusive anatta thing, not self, that everyone struggles with. It takes us there. It's a whole other avenue to recognizing not self, which is kind of wonderful. And one of the lovely, one of the most beautiful passages in Nikayas, which is the teachings of the Buddha, the Buddha said to be generous. And he says, bhikkhus, if beings knew, as I know, the result of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would the stain of stinginess obsess their minds. This is a jewel. I've read the Nikayas, and I don't remember anywhere else saying, if they knew what I know, in quite that way. It's a kind of a unique formulation. And it gives you this real sense like, ooh, he's really telling us something. There's some secret understanding in his awakenedness that he's trying to get across. Of course, he's always trying to get across from his awakenedness. But still, this is special. If beings knew, as I know, the result of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would the stain of stinginess obsess their minds. So that little tiny little thing has always kind of captivated me. I'm like, kind of, well, what does he know? And it's kind of kicked me in the butt when I'm, you know, being selfish, and because there was a pretty clear pointing to about something to be done. And, you know, it's one of those things, I think it's also in the Dharma, like there's this question of what was going on in the mind of the Buddha. Like, he navigated like a human being. You know, he walked around. He walked back and forth in the Ganges Valley. He met people and talked to them. He had people confront him. He had people go off the rails. He had people say brilliant things. Everything happened. So he was acting like a normal, and yet he had this completely other vast understanding that probably none of us have yet. So it's amazing to think about what he saw. So generosity, he emphasized, and it's so simple in one way, and as the Dharma always is, it's hard in another way. And there's a way in which generosity and the lack of it has everything to do with the joys and the ills of the world. But on a very human level, you know, what is it? It's someone giving something to another, choosing to give something to another, whether that be a physical object or an action of kindness, and whether the recipient be a human or some other kind of sentient being or someone perhaps that's passed, we don't know. But, you know, a dog, a squirrel, our cat friends, our sisters, the person we even just pass on the street, all those things is kindness, turning toward the welfare of another, giving something to another with some kind of warmth. And it's sort of related to loving kindness or metta, but loving kindness has to do with radiating goodwill, an attitude of kindness in a broad, radiating kind of way. Generosity has to do with this giving phenomena, you know, being generous. And kind of a critical difference is generosity also has to do with letting go of something. Because if we're giving something, that kind of means it was something we had and we just gave it to somebody. So there's a letting go in there that's not quite the same with loving kindness. You know, we had maybe something we had and instead we choose to give that to someone else. We let go of that which we had. So it's a unique combination of kindness and renunciation. And in that interlacing, it kind of helps define what both of those are. Because this illumination of renunciation is really helpful, because in our culture, renunciation is kind of, you know, the connotations are sort of a stiff self-denial and sort of a moralistic stance and kind of a pious position and all that sort of thing. And kind of forced, you know, maybe with a sense of looming moral judgment. So basically, it's no fun at all. It doesn't, there's no real upside in that kind of sense of it. And it kind of, you know, comes into our Judeo-Christian halt with all due respect and love for any Christians who are here, because I have a great warm spot in my heart for that tradition. I even went to Midnight Mass, even though I've never been Christian, but I went this last Christmas. But generosity, it's similar to renunciation, but it has this very different condition. Like, you know, if you give, say, money or food to a homeless or needy person, that would be a way to express generosity, giving something to help. Or we might give a gift or an action to someone close to us, whether we, you know, clean up the kitchen for our spouse or whatever we do. That feeds the strength of the relationship, but it's this kindness, this action, kindness in action. Or we might make an offering of dana, food, or other support to a religious, a monastic. We sort of got that Clear Mountain thing going on around here. Or any other spiritual thing that we feel drawn to support. All kinds of different actions of giving. But this giving, letting go, this word dana, many of you know it's a Pali word for generosity. But in all of these different forms I mentioned and, you know, multitudes of other possibilities, it has a kindness aspect. It's based on goodwill, and it has a giving aspect, a letting go, a handing over, that there can be kind of a blossoming or a happiness for the other person. And it's notable here that one of the most important lists, as you know, by many, many lists, the 10 paramis or perfections in Theravada tradition, generosity comes first. It's the first one. And in Mahayana tradition, it's the six perfections, essentially the same list, six of them, and generosity comes first. So it makes you wonder. I've always learned when something's first in one of the Buddha's lists, there's something to check out there. You know, the four foundations of mindfulness, it's body. That's always where we come back to. So it's worth paying attention to what comes first in the list. Or the Eightfold Noble Path, it's view. And that's like such a paradox, you know, we're supposed to be in the view of that which we're going to recognize in a sense, but it also gets us going. So it's really worth chewing over what's first in a list. So I'm going to have a couple of quotes in here. Gil Fronsdal, many of you know, if we're a great Western teacher down in California. He says, generosity, dana, is the first parami and the foundation of all the others. It is more than just giving. It's an opening of the heart, an act of letting go that is intimately connected to compassion. Generosity grows when rooted in the desire to help others while aligned with our capacity for inner freedom. When generosity is free from clinging, it becomes a profound expression of liberation. True generosity also requires attunement to others' needs, ensuring our actions support and alleviate suffering. So one way to look at it from that and what we're saying is that generosity brings life to the, especially in Mahayana, I talk about the two wings of awakening, compassion and emptiness. And generosity pulls those both in an integrated way, wisdom and compassion. So let's check on the second one first, compassion, because it's so accessible and also so alive. And in the ultimate sense, you know, compassion, I mean, we have compassion if, you know, people are suffering in a war zone, that kind of aching for them. But then in a more ultimate Dharma sense, compassion is wanting people to be free of dukkha, no matter their circumstance, wanting people to be liberated. Because there, that's the beauty of the Buddha's teachings, is no matter the circumstance, we can be in a state of equanimity. Even when things are rough, as I often say, this stuck in my heart. One of my teachers said, this has to work if you're in ICU with tubes sticking out of your body. I'm really taking that in, you know, because it's not just when it's all blissful and the air conditioning's right and there's no dog, but it's when you're in ICU with tubes sticking out of your body. That's when the rubber hits the road. So compassion, but we want on the ultimate level for beings to be free and in between that they not suffer, even if things are difficult, that they not suffer, or even, you know, that they not have pain, if that's possible. And generosity gets right in there and helps. That's where people help. It's an expression of compassion. You know, humans and animals rescue each other all the time. And I did burrow down into AI Reveal, and if you go into YouTube, there's all kinds of crazy videos about otters saving puppies off the roofs of houses, and it turns out that's almost all AI generated. It had me fooled. I really had to like work it. But man, it really catches your attention. It's so sweet. Even the people who want to do that is kind of sweet. But there's compassion there. You know, there's something doing for another. That is generous. Relieving another's suffering. And a key component is someone helping another with some risk or sacrifice for themselves. That's where it's a stretch. It's not always easy. You do something for someone, and often it's hard to do that. You got to let go. There's some dynamic going on there. That's where it becomes powerful. That's where it starts to change something in us. Because we're generous when we stretch to help another, just like we're brave when we do something when we're scared versus if we're not scared, we're not so brave. Maybe just stupid, but we're not so brave. But when we really are stretching to help another, even when it's hard, that's generous. And when we're letting go of something to put another first. Letting go of something to put another first. Now, Jeff Bezos, some of you may have heard of him. And if he gives $1,000 to someone, is that generosity? I don't know. I don't know how to think about it. I mean, I did the math. It's 1/3 of the hourly cost of keeping his yacht Koru, just maintained. So it's about $3,000 an hour just to keep it maintained. So $1,000 that he gave to someone for Jeff, you know, I don't know. There's no, perhaps, I'm not going to criticize the man. Yeah, I have no idea. But just his relative is my point. But if a humble working person gives someone $1,000, and it's amazing doing his phone calls of thanks, I mean, there'll be someone that they give $10 and they call him, and it's this older woman in Mississippi, and she said, I'm on Social Security. I wish I could give more. This was really, I did 10, that's what I could do. I did just like, oh my God, that is so beautiful. You know, that's generosity. Someone stretched to do that. And that's what changes something inside of us. Because the Buddha, he alluded to the generosity of relative to means and intent. And then the stain of stinginess won't obsess their minds. Isn't that a great stain of stinginess? Whatever the Pali is, I don't know, but just the English is really capturing it. Stain of stinginess won't obsess your minds. So let's get into the sort of little more inner levels of generosity, because in particular, generosity undermines me-making. It undermines our sense of concretization of self. Because when we're giving, we're letting go of something about this me that we cling to so much. And this is important because I know for many people, the anatta teachings, not self teachings of the Buddha Dharma, are really challenging. You know, I've had a lot of conversations. It's really hard for people to get their heads around that. It's so counterintuitive. But when we're exercising generosity, it's kind of coming alive. We're doing it. We don't even have to cognitively understand it. We're just doing it. And that opens the door to change in a profound way, in an experiential way. Maybe more important than having the ideas about it. Because in all of his teachings, the Buddha constantly warns against the kind of contracting forces of selfing. He's always trying to get people to look beyond that, not to be selfish, not to be focused on their identity, on all of that. And the ways that we create a sense of self. In the second sermon, he gave these, there's three sermons he gave, which are chronologically, supposedly. The first one, he talked about the Four Noble Truths. The second one, he talked about not self. And the third is the fire sermon, right? In the few first weeks after he was awakened, or first months anyway. And in the second one, he listed the five aggregates, which are the five, also called the five skandhas, or the five khandhas in Pali, the five aspects of our psychology that make up our sense of self-identity. And he said we shouldn't identify with them. Here's the quote. He said, thus monks, from the second sutta, thus, or second sermon, thus monks, any form, feeling, perception, fabrication, or consciousness whatsoever that is past, future, or present, internal or external, blatant or subtle, common or sublime, far or near, every consciousness is to be seen as it actually is, with the right discernment, as this is not mine, this is not myself, this is not what I am. And he says that, he repeats that about all five of the skandhas, goes through that same, I love some of that stuff, blatant or subtle, that's really interesting. This is in Sarnath, which is where he did this, Sarnath, India, right outside of Varanasi, where he gave this thing. But you can see that every aspect of the stinginess he warned about is in fact some expression of selfing. That's how people are stingy. That's how people are selfish. They're concretizing their selfing. They're trying to get something for themselves. We see this going on a political level without, we never mention names, we never mention political anyway. But you know, you look at the world, there's a lot of selfing going on, not generosity. Put that, you know, have someone in power on a global level, they can cause a lot of damage by not expressing generosity. We all at times have an experience of stingy, if you will, because we want to keep something for ourselves. We're resisting giving it to everyone. You ever have that idea? Joseph Goldstein has this great, Joseph, he's a great, great Western teacher, and he has a great thing that he's, his commitment to himself is, if the thought comes up in his mind to give something to somebody, he gives it to him. It's a wonderful thing to do, and I've tried to do that. I've really tried to adopt that. It's kind of like sometimes, like, really? Oh, come on. I don't want to give that. You know, and I got to struggle with myself, and mostly I do it. Not always, but mostly I do. But it's pretty interesting. It's like our psyche is kind of up in the ante a little bit. Like, really? That? It's beautiful, but it's a stretch. And we see that generosity just in that action of stretching pulls us out of our self-grasping and our sense of concretization. It pulls us towards recognizing not self. Because people hold on to things because they want the good stuff for themselves. They want the good sensations for themselves. You know, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, the second foundation. They want the good sensations. That's a lot of, you know, that's how we humans tend to navigate our life choices, trying to get the good stuff, trying to keep the bad stuff away. So, you know, think hypothetically of anyone you know you might consider sort of greedy and not inclined to generosity, and this is someone with a concrete sense of self. You ever look at that part? They have a very concrete sense of self, which is why someone that's more on the selfish side of the spectrum is that way. But on the other hand, this generosity, it frees us. It unlocks our sense of self. We're participating in letting selfing come apart, which is so amazing, because this is a simple little thing. We don't have to understand anatta. We just do it. And when our hearts turn toward generosity, we're just letting go of something we might have had for ourselves and giving it to another. And this is an action of not self. Because just in that deciding, it's a choice. There's always a choice to benefit someone, to be generous. We turn away from this dark stickiness of selfing, which is what it was, which is why it causes suffering. And there's an opening of wisdom. Because not self and emptiness in Mahayana are essentially the same. The only difference is that not self returns to selfhood, and emptiness is all phenomena. But we're just opening up into that realm of wisdom just by the simple act of being generous. How cool is that? It's kind of like an on-ramp. And if you think about it, it's always good to think about people you might recognize as highly aware, highly evolved beings. So the Dalai Lama or some of the Theravada monastics that was mentioned by Marilyn and the local ones here, or someone like Steve Armstrong. Because Steve, by the way, you probably didn't notice about Steve Armstrong. He was a pretty high profile teacher. And so he ended up, there's a lot of dana coming his way, and he knew some very wealthy people. So you know what he did? He built schools and clinics in Myanmar. I mean, a lot of schools and clinics, like about 100. It's incredible how much they created. He just poured the dana through. He just said, "Well, I don't think he even had a car. I guess he had a St. Peter car, but that's not what he was doing with it. He had no yacht, I guarantee you. He just poured it through." I met him in Myanmar one time, and he showed me some of this stuff. And also, he supported female monastics in Myanmar, and so amazing. So, and he did it kind of quietly. I mean, not that many people even. He mentioned it once in a while, when Donna talked. He said, "Well, here's what I'm going to do with it," but he didn't make a big deal about it. But he just did it and did it and did it. And the Clear Mountain monks, because I'm on the board, I kind of attend that. It's very interesting, how do I say, when you're with someone out of the limelight, how they are. That's always really telling, right? Like someone, do they walk their talk? The monks are amazing. I mean, they're just so unbelievably consistent. This Ajahn Disipa and Ajahn Kovilo, they're just so incredibly kind. And I've been in lots of, especially when Ajahn Disipa was first here and we were going to different churches and meeting people. And I would just stand back and go, "Oh my God." He would just like pull someone in and ask them about themselves in this incredible way. And then it turned out he knew something about their tradition, or, he'd be able to talk their talk. But it's incredible generosity just flowing. Kind of a pure continuum. And in that continuity of generosity, no self is to be found. That's the magic. They often say, you couldn't insult the Dalai Lama. They say, "Dalai Lama, you're a butthead." Compassion would come back. It wouldn't even land, right? There is no self there. You can't insult the Dalai Lama. I don't think you can insult these monks. There's no grasping, no stickiness. There's no self, no selfing. Because the self is built out of grabbing on, grasping. That's what the Buddha always says, grasping onto the five aggregates. That's a way of looking at the problem of suffering. But generosity keeps undoing that. Keeps undoing that. So it just, generosity is amazing. It reveals not self in this really natural, visceral, flowing way. We can see it at work. And when you look, contemplate some spiritual person you know, look at their sort of flexible, fluid sense of giving that they have. And there's not stickiness here. There's just this little attachment, little adhesion. The Buddha said, every consciousness is to be seen as it actually is, with right discernment, as this is not mine, this is not myself, this is not what I am. Just repeating what he said earlier. This good to keep looking at. So therefore, a delightful paradox of generosity, giving away your stuff, is that it brings us happiness. What's that about, right? It brings us happiness. You think we want more stuff to be happy, but actually, like he who dies with the most toys wins. That is like really funny. It's like, really? How is that a good thing? So it brings us happiness. And the happiness it brings is not the, satisfactory experience of a good meal or a fast car or a big yacht. These are all kind of attributes of temporary fleeting pleasure for people who want stuff for themselves first, but it's actually much bigger. It's much bigger. And because generosity peels away layers of selfing, it's also peeling away the layers of obscurations that obscure our inherent luminous nature of mind. That quote I always say, the mind is luminous obscured by visiting defilements. It's from the numerical discourses. And it's a good, to me, it's a wonderful model to understand the practice. We're peeling away, visiting defilements, luminosity emerges, and generosity takes us there. The Buddha said, and this is in the Book of Sevens, in the numerical discourses, he said, "Bhikkhus, when a person is endowed with faith, they give gifts. Before giving, the mind is glad. While giving, the mind is clear. After giving, the mind is uplifted. This, bhikkhus, is the reward of generosity here and now." So, it's sort of widely known in common, just regular culture out there that generous people are happy people. Everyone kind of knows that. The grandma who makes cookies for the neighborhood kids and she's really kind of a happy person. Or the postman who has an attitude of happily offering letters. There's all these kind of, everyone's kind of has a sense of that pretty much, right? Kind of an infectious, cheerful kindness which uplifts. So it's kind of amazing to consider that that simple thing that all third graders kind of know is a profound aspect of the Dharma at work that we can do. Because we're revealing, just when we're generous, we're revealing the light of not self, of Buddha nature. Every moment by moment by moment by moment, Dharma is sort of stringing together pearls. So we all have the opportunity to keep stringing together pearls, even in the middle of difficulty, even in the middle of a difficult world. We sort of owe it, actually, to ourselves and others to do that in the middle of a difficult world. So this is kind of a profound step in practice when just to have any being, even briefly, even in flickers, radiating this innate inner light of their true nature just by getting out of their own way. That is so beautiful when that happens. And it happens. It keeps happening. Everybody does it, just to kind of recognize it and treasure it and keep cultivating that. So to get all the way back to the beginning, this kind of all this sheds new light on the Buddha's initial statements. And when he talks about what I see, I was like, what is he talking about? I mean, one thing he sees, depending on what you think about rebirth and all that, but according to the suttas, he saw during his period of awakening, he saw all of his previous lifetimes. He saw all of his previous lifetimes, and then he saw all the lifetimes of everybody. Some massive flash of seeing all the lifetimes of everybody. So he's kind of, in a certain sense, he's sort of, he's in this plane, but he's also in touch, with the other side, with that continuity of consciousness, depending on how you think about it. So whatever you think about Buddhist cosmology, but just think about if there is continuity of consciousness, something going on after death, maybe rebirth, maybe Steve is on some journey right now. If we're cultivating generosity and thus getting more in tune with that brightness, that inner light, how good would that be after death? Because, and I've had, I know a lot of people have had NDEs. I've done stuff with mediums. I've got a long spiritual journey here. And on the other side, and even you read stuff about the Bardo, on the other side, we don't have a body to ground us. Our body really keeps things kind of stable. What if we were just our mind? Just the qualities of our mind. Then the rubber would really hit the road about what we've been up to. My heart goes out to anyone who's been really violent or negative in their lives when they are there. That's what the Dalai Lama is so incredible. It's the only thing I've ever heard him say about the Chinese invaders who destroyed his country and burned down most of the monasteries and killed 1 million people is he feels compassion for their situation in their next lifetime. So it's about the only thing I've ever heard him say. It's so amazing. So the Buddha said, we're almost done. There are these six benefits of giving. One is dear and pleasing to many people. Good people associate with one. A good reputation spreads about one. One is confident in any assembly. Upon the breakup of the body, after death, one is reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. So there's a way to look at generosity as it leads us toward awakening. And sometimes meditation seems hard, chanting seems hard. Generosity is kind of accessible. Just do that. I know people that volunteer at food banks, do whatever they do, or just be kind to your dog, or be kind to your spouse, even when it's hard, even when your spouse is being like, she thinks you're difficult, they seem to be kind. Then, generous. That's the big stretch. It's essential in the path. The Buddha said in the Numerical Discourses, the noble disciple dwells at home with a mind free from the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment. He practices the abandoning of all acquisitions. And abandoning of all acquisitions, it's almost like there are a lot of code words in the Dharma. This is one of those areas, to be not clinging, to be free of grasping, this moving into awakening. That's part of the code he's talking about. Because it's craving, that's the root, second noble truth, that's the root of dukkha. So a case could be made, and I'm going to go out on a limb and then I'll stop, is that generosity can be a key factor in leading one to stream entry. And stream entry is the point where, from a Buddhist point of view, you're not going to go back, you won't go into a lower realm. Awakening is inevitable. To become a stream emperor is a big deal. And the key, there's three requirements. One is not doing idle rituals, and one is not having doubt about the path. But the most important one is really having a full understanding, breaking through into not self. That's the key. Breaking through into not self. That's the pivot point of being a stream emperor. And if generosity takes apart selfing, as we've been exploring, there it is thus a key avenue towards stream entry. So just keep cultivating that, and we're walking toward awakening. Let's sit for a minute.